You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Coming up on the Hockey News pregame show, Nashville, Washington. Which dark horse team could go all the way this year?
Zach Hyman and Sam Reinhardt hit 50 goals this season. Who could surprise us next year?
And joining us from Vancouver, we've got Canucks team site editor Adam Kierzenblatt on a team that could win the President's Trophy.
I'm Ryan Kennedy.
I'm Michael Trakos, and this is the Hockey News pregame show brought to you by BetMGM and NorthlandHockey.com. What's up, hockey fans? Welcome to the Hockey News pregame show. I'm Michael Trakos. With me, as always, is Ryan Kennedy. Ryan, we're about a month away from the start of the playoffs, which means one of these underdog teams are probably going to do what Florida did last year. Am I right, or...?
Maybe. Hey, I mean, if we could predict it, we would be millionaires.
Yeah, well, last year, the Panthers didn't make the playoffs until the final week of the season. They relied on some help from the Chicago Blackhawks and beating the Pittsburgh Penguins right before the regular season ended. And lo and behold, they took down the President's Trophy Bruins and went on quite a run. And we've seen that run from a number of teams over the history of the NHL playoffs, most notably probably the LA Kings, who were the final seed, I think, in the playoffs the 1 year they won and went on to win the whole thing. So it's not a far stretch of the imagination saying that, you know, maybe a Nashville or a Washington or a Detroit or, you know, maybe an LA goes all the way. If you had to pick, like, who do you like in terms of those dark horse teams that could go on a Cinderella type run?
I like Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, this is a team where they still have holdovers from those cup years
That's true, right?
They still have Andre Kopitar. They still have Drew Doughty. But then they have this next wave, guys like Kempe and Fiala. Quentin Byfield has been a difference maker this year, which has been great for them. In net, you know, I think, you know, Cam Talbot, when they got him the proper rest, he was excellent for them. So I'm pretty comfortable with Cam Talbot in the Kings net, especially with the crew that he has in front of him. They're deep down the middle. You know, not only do they have Kopitar, but obviously they have Philippe Deneau, and they have Pierre-Luc Dubois as well. So when you're going into a playoff series and you have strength down the middle, when you have a, you know, a pretty heavy lineup, that tends to bode well. And like I say, they've got the experience. So for them, they're certainly one of those franchises that's like, hey, all we have to do is get in and we can win. We've done it before.
And right now, if the season were to end, the LA Kings would play the Edmonton Oilers. I don't know if that's a favorable matchup for Edmonton. I think last year the Oilers played the Kings in the first round, right?
They did, and they beat them, but I think this would be a little more close. And again, like, just the depth that the Kings have this season versus last year, the fact that Byfield has taken a tremendous step in his development, and again, you know, they're deeper down the middle. I would say their goaltending probably stronger as well. Edmonton, it's going to come down to the goaltending, frankly. I mean, if you saw, you know, on the weekend against Toronto, Toronto is obviously a playoff team. They're pretty much indicative of the competition level Edmonton's going to face in the postseason. To me, it's a bit of that should have been a wake-up call for the Oilers.
A team that's right behind the LA Kings, technically 1 point ahead of them, but because of, you know, the Nashville Predators are in the Central Division where 1, 2, and 3 pretty much are locked up. The Preds could be a wild card team, a first wild card team right now. This is a team I do not want to play, just based on how they're entering the playoffs. They're on a 17-game point streak right now, Ryan.
My God.
Which is just insane. Roman Josi, no one's talking about him for the Norris. I wonder right now, like, he's only...
It's creeping in there.
9 back of Quinn Hughes. Since the post... Since the All-Star break, I think he's got the most points out of any defenseman in the NHL. You know, 72 points in 71 games. Why are we not talking about Roman Josi for the Norris?
I think it's because he's kind of like crept up on us. And there was so much buzz at the beginning of the season about Quinn Hughes, and rightly so. Quinn Hughes has been amazing for the Canucks, and the fact that he is still the points leader.
We were talking about him for the heart, potentially.
We certainly were. And then, of course, you have Cale Makar, who's obviously always in that conversation. So I think that, you know, Roman Josi playing such a big role in getting Nashville into a wild card spot, that's going to raise some eyebrows. And I'm sure he'll get some Norris love. Will he get enough to win it? Maybe not, but he will rightfully be in the conversation.
Another reason why I like Nashville, they got Ryan O'Reilly playing at a Selke level. I still think that Anze Kopitar might be the favorite as we look at who could win the Selke.
There's Barkov, too.
Barkov is another name. Yeah. But Ryan O'Reilly, 24 goals and 58 points in his first year in Nashville. Obviously, this guy is just, you know, he's won a Stanley Cup with the Blues. Then you look at Philip Forsberg, 39 goals, 78 points. So, you know, things are clicking there. Andrew Burnett's probably going to get a lot of love for the Jack Adams as well. Again, that Predators team, you know, whether they're going to play the Canucks or possibly the Colorado Avalanche or, you know, who knows, it could be the Dallas Stars with how things are shaking up. Again, I don't want to play Nashville at all.
Fair enough.
Let's throw another team out there. What do you think of Washington? Because, you know, we mentioned just two teams out of the West. In the East, the Capitals have won 5 of the last 6. We know Ovi is heating up right now. Darcy Kemper is not the goaltender right now, but again, he's a guy who's won a cup and, you know, he can go in as spot duty.
It is nice to have options. And, you know, if you look at Charlie Lindgren, who has been their sort of goaltender of record for most of the season, I would say at this point, like his goals saved above expected is like top 10 in the NHL. Like Charlie Lindgren really helped Washington this year. Darcy Kemper, you know, had some struggles early. So it is nice to have options, and you're right. You know, Kemper has the experience. And again, Washington has the experience, right? They've got guys like Ovi, like John Carlson, like Tom Wilson when he returns from a suspension, who have won the Cup before. And you can't discount that. Is Washington a flawed team? Certainly. Do I love their centers? In terms of depth? Not really.
No.
It'll be interesting to see who they go up against. It's not going to be an easy matchup, that's for sure. You know, it could be Florida. It could be the Rangers.
But could be the Bruins.
Yeah. It could be the Bruins.
Or Carolina.
Or Carolina.
So. Which brings us to the point. There's 7 teams that are in the hunt for the President's Trophy right now. I think they're all within 1 point.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of insane.
It really is. I mean, can you call that parody, I guess? Or is it just that there's also some really horrible teams?
Yeah, maybe. And it's, yeah, like, how many times has a President's Trophy team won a Stanley Cup? Like, it's usually it's usually the year after. Like, Tampa got swept by Columbus that 1 year, then they won back-to-back cups. I'm trying to think. There was another instance that's happened, but obviously, like, you know, you win the President's Trophy, and it's not like, all right. Boston last year is a perfect example.
Yeah, exactly.
They lost to that Dark Horse team.
It's not party time. I feel like maybe it was the Chicago team in the lockout interrupted season that won the President's Trophy and the Cup.
You're right. They did, and then the Red Wings team won it way back. I think when they beat Pittsburgh, they might have been the best team in the NHL. A team that's still kind of hovering around, you know, I don't know if they're going to chase the Vancouver Canucks, but the Edmonton Oilers, a big week for them. Zach Hyman gets goal number 50 on the same night that Sam Reinhart got goal number 50. And, you know, two late bloomers. I think Zach Hyman is the oldest first-time 50-goal scorer. I had it on the tip of my tongue, but it's been like 35 years.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Which is just insane. Are we going to see this again, Ryan? And, you know, let's throw out some candidates who could be first-time 50-goal scorers or, you know, those late bloomers that are just going to
have a breakout season.
Breakout year. And I guess we're talking next year.
Yeah, so next year, I got two names in mind. And I'm not sure about 50 goals, but I'm talking breakout or continuing to, you know, improve. Carter Verhaeghe in Florida is a player where he's really found his game playing for the Panthers the past few seasons.
Yep.
But he keeps getting better. So, I mean, could he hit 50 goals? I think that's possible. You know, at worst, I think, you know, next year you could look at like 45 goals for him. The other name, just kind of, you know, just from watching this year that I'm kind of curious about, Blake Coleman in Calgary. He's been really good for the Flames.
Yeah.
And again, like, you know, late bloomer, whatever you call him, or just a veteran who's taken on a different role in Calgary. I think the Flames, you know, what are they going to be like next year? Hard to say. Are they going to go a bit younger? They're going to still want to have veterans. And they do have some top-end guys like Huberdeau, Nazem Kadri, players like that. But Blake Coleman, I mean, I could see him getting, you know, 30, maybe 35 goals next year. But in general, just kind of like amping up how many points he puts up in general.
Now, I don't know if I'd call him a late bloomer because he's won a Hart Memorial Trophy and he was a first-round pick, first overall pick.
That's
but
right.
Taylor Hall has never scored 40 goals in his NHL career. Mm. Could you see him scoring 50 if he ends up playing with Connor Bedard and if, you know, Taylor Hall stays healthy next year?
Yeah, I could see it. At the least, I could see, you know, because, I mean, Bedard's he has great vision, so, you know, he can be a playmaker. He also has that wicked shot. So you get into a situation where it's like, who do you want to have the puck on their stick? Like, does Hall get 100 points thanks to playing with Bedard?
Just playing setup, man.
Yeah, exactly. Or do they go the other way? You know, yeah. Do they both end up with like 90 points next year? I can certainly see that relationship being mutually beneficial.
And that's the thing when you're talking about like a Hyman, like he doesn't get 50 goals if he's not playing with Connor McDavid.
No.
So you almost need to play with good players to get that breakout season. That's why, you know, again, I'll look at Valeri Nichushkin as a potential guy that could do it because, you know, you're playing with Nate MacKinnon and, you know, and Mikko Rantanen this year.
Yeah.
So that's another guy where you're going, you know, obviously Nichushkin was huge for them in that playoffs when they won a cup, but he's never been a, you know, superstar scorer. And again, you put him on that line and, you know, for a full season, and maybe Nichushkin could get that done. What do you make of Pierre-Luc Dubois? Obviously, his time in, you know, Columbus, Winnipeg, and now even L.A. Like, I think he's playing on their third line in L.A., but could he be a guy that, you know, we still haven't seen the best of, obviously, Pierre-Luc Dubois. And, you know, with Byfield having his breakout year this year, you know, maybe those guys team up and Dubois, you know, ends up getting 40 or 50 goals.
I mean,
I know, it's a long shot, isn't it?
Anything can happen, but it feels like...
But no one thought Hyman would do it.
I suppose not, but you never questioned how Hyman played the game, right? Like, with Zach Hyman, he has a definitive role, right? It's similar to Nichushkin in that way, where it's like, he's not the most skilled guy on this line, but he'll do the hard work. He'll go to the scoring areas. You know, he'll go to the front of the net or the side of the net. And, you know, he basically had a tap-in for his 50th, right, where they were like, you know where to go. And that's a skill in itself. With Dubois, I think if he's not going to be effective as a center, maybe move him to wing next year. And just be like, you know what, it's just not working for us. Or you recalibrate expectations and say, you're just a shutdown guy, you know, like we don't expect any offense from you or whatever, sort of secondary or even tertiary offense.
True.
But you recalibrate your expectations because I don't see Pierre-Luc Dubois at this point being a 65-point guy.
I don't see it either. I think at his best, he's probably a two-way guy.
Certainly.
But yeah, I think a lot of people have just soured on Pierre-Luc Dubois. And you're right about Hyman. Like, there was that graphic that everyone's been sharing on social media where it shows where his goals are coming from. And they're all, like, within 2 or 3 feet away from the net.
Uh-huh.
So people are like, oh, he's just a garbage goal merchant or whatever. And, you know, basically doing what Phil Esposito did back in the 70s. I didn't see Phil Esposito play,
right.
But people tell me that's what he did.
Dave Andrechuk.
Yeah, Dave Andrechuk is a perfect example of that. So, you know, you go to the net and you got a guy like McDavid who can always find you the puck, like even on that goal. Did you see the mic'd up video?
Yeah, that was great.
It's like inaudible where McDavid tells Hyman like what the deal is, but he's obviously saying, yeah, go to the side of the net, I'm going to take the puck, and I'm just going to feed you a pass.
And here's the thing, it's like, you could say like, oh, anybody can do that, but they don't.
No.
Like, that's the key to Zach Hyman's whole career. He's a smart player, and, you know, he can be a physical guy. He knows where to go. And again, look at the playoffs last year. If anybody had done that against Florida in either Toronto or Carolina, Florida might not get to the final. it takes somebody that has the guts and the smarts to be in the right position in what is going to be a difficult position in order to score.
Two names that we're going to just finish on, Michael Bunting, Tyler Bertuzzi.
Mm.
Bunting's going to be playing with Crosby maybe all next season. It's not the same Crosby that was in his, you know, late 20s or whatever, where he was like feeding Chris Kunitz, but that's another possibility. And Tyler Bertuzzi, you know, he's a two-time 21-goal scorer, scored 30 goals in his full season in Detroit, has 15 this year. That's not out of the stretch of the imagination.
No, that's true. And, you know, I mean, he's a pending UFA, so he can choose who he wants to play with. He might go to a market where they need a guy on a top line that can do that, you know, get those tip-ins, get those greasy goals. And we're starting to see Bertuzzi really heat up in the second half. It'll be interesting to see what he does in the playoffs for Toronto.
All right. It'll be interesting to see how the goalie situation also shakes up in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Things are in flux, okay? Let's just say that.
Right.
Freddie Anderson is back.
Undefeated.
And undefeated. Like 10-1-0 this season. 8 goals against in his 6 starts since recovering from a blood clotting issue. Is he your number one starter if the playoffs start right now, or are you still going young?
You know what? I feel like Carolina has the luxury at this point of starting with Anderson because he is so hot. Like, let's just assume he maintains this heat for the next 3 weeks or so. I think you probably start with him, and if there's any signs of a problem, you go to Kachetkov right away.
Great problem to have.
Exactly. It's a luxury, and one we've seen more in the playoffs. Again, even going back to that Colorado, well, Vegas played Logan Thompson and Aiden Hill. I think Jonathan Quick might even got in a game or two in that playoff run. Colorado, when Darcy Kemper got hurt, Pavel Francouz took over, and it was fine. So there used to be that thought that you needed one guy.
Yeah.
I think that's gone by the wayside. It's a different game. You know, it's such a hard schedule in the playoffs that you need at least two guys that you're confident in. So for Carolina, it's very important that they have two guys, and I think right now they do.
It's very rare that you've got an Andre Vasilevsky or a Connor Hellebuyck or even maybe an Igor Shesterkin where you can say, you know, from game one to the final game, we are ride or die with you.
Right.
Like even Shesterkin, you might say, you know what, things kind of get a little rocky. Jonathan Quick has done the job all year.
And Jonathan Quick, I mean, you got to remember at the beginning of the season, in particular, Shesterkin struggled. Mm-hmm. And Quick really kind of helped the Rangers out there by taking on a number of starts where he kept them on track. And obviously, I mean, they've been a tremendous team anyways. But, you know, you win some games 5-3 instead of losing them 6-5.
Yep.
It all adds up.
Jake Ottinger's heating up. He was one of the 3 stars in the NHL this week. He went 3-0-0 with a .920 save percentage. And he wasn't having the greatest of year. Like, this is his worst statistical year that he's had since, you know, becoming a full-time NHLer. And then we look at Toronto. Ilya Samsonov leaves the game the other night. He's still not 100%. It looks like Joseph Woll is going to be the starter with Marty Jones as the backup. And lo and behold, we got Matt Murray.
He was on the ice.
On the ice. And he could be cleared to play in April. That being said, he'll probably get assigned to the Toronto Marlies in the AHL. Mm. It's a weird situation with Toronto because they don't have a quote-unquote number one goalie. I think long term, you're probably looking at Joseph Woll.
Yeah.
Short term, it's probably going to be who's hotter at the moment. Is it Samsonov? Is it Woll? You know, it could even be Marty Jones, depending on injury situation and just who's looking good. Mm-hmm. Is that a worry if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Certainly. And I mean, net mining has been a worry most of the season for the Leafs. I mean, when Woll got hot, that really helped, and then he got hurt. Samsonov of late has been excellent for them.
He was really
good. So that's a good sign.
5-1-1 in March.
Yeah. So, again, I think if you're Toronto and you head into the playoffs, assuming Samsonov's healthy, I don't really know, like, because Woll has been so good all year. So do you go with somebody with a little more experience, or do you go with the guy that's been more consistent? I think this is also a situation where you start with one of them, and by the second game, if you're not 100%, you say, okay, well, let's go with the other guy and see if he can carry us.
No, it's a It's what I love about the playoffs, because you just don't know what's going to happen. Speaking of which, March Madness, Ryan.
Yes.
Got a bracket this year? Fill one out?
I totally forgot.
Me too.
About the basketball.
I probably saved myself $10 by not filling it out, because
I certainly did, because I don't pay attention anymore.
Yeah.
And I used to love it.
I remember, like, when you and I were roommates, we'd fill it out, and I was just, that's when I became an expert for, like, that 1 or 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But this year, I'm not following it. That being said, you know, it's one of the things that makes college, the college playoff format so exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can take casual sports fans and say, here's a bracket.
Yeah.
It's single elimination. There's going to be just complete chaos.
Yeah.
You're going to see a low seed defeat a top seed.
That's right.
Every day. You don't have to be an expert, which raises the question, why hasn't the Canadian Hockey League adopted a similar style? Like, right now we have OHL playoffs, which follow the same kind of structure as the NHL.
Yeah.
And the Dub does that, and the Q does that. And then the winners go play in a Mem Cup against a host team. And it's basically four teams. And that's a little bit more interesting, because it's kind of like a best on best.
Yeah.
But what do you think of opening it up March Madness style? I don't know if you go 16 deep. Is that what the NCAA Frozen?
The Frozen Four is 16 teams. Yeah.
Yes.
And the bracket actually just came out Sunday. It's going to be pretty awesome, I have to say.
So I don't know if you go 16, if you go, is it 64 for the basketball?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's they have the play-in games now, which to me, as like a purist, I never liked the play-in. It's like, if you make the tournament, you should make the tournament.
Okay.
So, I mean,
but whether it's 16, whether it's 32, whether it's 64, do you think this could work across Canada, best of, or maybe after the OHL and the Dub and the Q finish their playoffs, we just go, okay, you know, the winners of each division now go on to this sort of March Madness style bracket?
I'm intrigued. You're like, talking about a huge, like, teardown here, right?
I don't know if anyone's going to buy it, because
maybe not.
Single elimination, it's, you know, you're going to see some top teams go out.
You certainly will. So, okay, one way, first of all, there's 60 teams in Major Junior. So you can't do 64 unless you have a bye in the first round, which you totally could, right? You could do, like, whoever wins the regular season in all three leagues, and then, you know, the second highest amount of points. So you could do that, right? And then you go single elimination. But in this case, because they already play a ton of games, so you would have to do this instead of Major Junior playoffs, in my opinion, if you were going to do it.
So take out the, each league doesn't have a playoff then.
Right.
This just like replaces it.
Yeah, okay. And that would be a tall order. I don't think that's going to happen. But I wonder, if you did a 32-team bracket, is there some way of doing it where maybe not as many teams make the playoffs, or the rounds are only best of five instead of best of seven, so you're sort of pulling things back? What would be intriguing about that is you could have, like, those regionals where you have a bunch of games in the same arena across Canada. So maybe, like, Halifax hosts one, and, like, Red Deer hosts one, London hosts one, that kind of thing. You rotate around. That would be intriguing, but you'd have to get buy-in, obviously, because this would be a radical transformation. And obviously you would not have the Memorial Cup, because you would be having this, or unless the Memorial Cup is your Final Four.
Ooh.
You could do that.
Again, it would take some buy-in, because right now the Mem Cup is almost like a round-robin format.
It is, and then playoffs. My beef with the Memorial Cup is that they only do one game a day. So it takes like 10 days to do the tournament. It's just too long.
I've covered it, and it is long.
Yeah.
Okay. Our THN correspondent, Tony Ferrari, had an interesting story where he was asking, would you rather have player A or player B? And I love this idea, because some of the debates that he raised were really interesting, and I'm going to ask you the same kind of similar questions here.
Yeah.
I've kind of tweaked it. I've taken Tony's idea and kind of run with it here.
There you go.
So Macklin Celebrini, who by all accounts should be the number one overall pick this year, or Matvei Michkov, who, you know, by all accounts was the second best player aside from Connor Bedard in last year's draft, is still in the KHL. Who would you rather pick right now if you had to get one of them on your team? And obviously, Michkov is still under contract for the KHL, but let's put that by the wayside.
Yeah, yeah. He would be available at the end of next season. This is a very tough one because Michkov is a winger. Celebrini is the center. I always go with the centers. And, you know, I was writing about this on Future Watch Weekly on the website a couple of weeks ago. You know, talking to scouts, some of them are saying, like, we're not talking about Celebrini enough this year.
Right.
And they were saying it's like because Connor Bedard has been so great in the NHL that there's sort of a long shadow there. So I'm going to go Celebrini.
Wow.
Because, yeah, he could be your number one center. He's a little bit bigger than Michkov, which also helps. And this is no shade to Michkov. I think he's going to be an incredible player. But you got give me the number one center, like, almost every time. And I say almost because I'm going to contradict myself very soon.
I was going to say Michkov leads Sochi, 19 goals in 47 games. But Celebrini, a Hobey Baker finalist, youngest player in the NCAA this year, tied for third in scoring. All right, next up, Jure Slafkovský or Logan Cooley. This was sort of a debate who should go number one overall, but who do you have right now, sort of 2 years later?
Yeah, so this is where I'll contradict myself, because Logan Cooley is a center and Jure Slafkovský is a winger, but I still see the long-term potential in Slafkovský. Cooley, he's got time to develop, right? I mean, he's still so young, but he is a little bit undersized, and we haven't seen that breakthrough yet in his rookie season. And again, it's his rookie season, you know.
And he's playing on a really...
He's playing on a bad team.
Bad team.
Yeah, so fair enough. But, I mean, Slafkovský, if I already have Max Celebrini on my team, then Jure Slafkovský...
This isn't you build a team here.
No, I know. But I think Slafkovský, you know, once he becomes his fully formed power forward winger, I think he could be very special. Again, this is like, you know, I'm picking between my children here, but I'll go Slafkovský.
They've put up similar numbers this year. This is Cooley's first full season in the NHL, and this is Slafkovský's first full season, but he did play a bunch of games last year. You know, Cooley's got 13 goals, 34 points. Slafkovský's got 15 goals, 39 points. So, you know, Slafkovský's got a chance at maybe getting 20. I don't think he's going to get it based on what he's scoring, but...
Yeah.
You know, again, next year is going to really be the test to see, okay, who takes that leap, I guess.
Yeah, and again, interesting because there's such different body types, right? So for Slafkovský, you would hope that as he continues to fill out that frame and get stronger, he can be more imposing. Whereas with Cooley, the challenge, you know, it was always about getting stronger with him and getting that extra gear because he was already a great skater, but he could be an elite skater once he got stronger. So that's going to be interesting to see. Just with their development paths, which one kind of hits first?
Okay, final one. Mm. We're going to go goaltenders here.
Mm-hmm.
Jake Oettinger or Thatcher Demko. And the age is somewhat similar. They both roughly played around the same number of games.
Mm-hmm.
Demko's 2 inches shorter, but don't hold that against him.
Right. Is he two? Really? I thought Demko was like 6'4".
According to HockeyDB, okay?
Uh-huh.
And maybe one of them is lying and one of them doesn't.
Right. Because Demko's got good size to him.
Demko, I think, is 6'4".
Yeah.
And
Oettinger's not 6'6".
Dude, I got it here. 6'6".
Really?
224.
Wow.
He's got a long neck.
All right, fair enough. I'm still going to go Demko because there's no maximum with goalie height. It's the minimum that concerns me.
Right.
6'4 is totally good. Demko, again, they're both incredible. I'd love to have either of them, but Demko, I don't know. I mean, they've both had some pretty decent playoff runs.
I would argue Demko plays on the worst, and this is nothing against the Canucks, but the worst defense, not as good of a defensive team as
right.
the Stars.
Yeah.
I think it's
certainly
easier to be a goaltender for the Stars than it is for the Canucks.
Certainly. Yeah.
So that's pretty fair to say.
Oh, definitely. I mean, Dallas has been one of the best defensive teams for years.
Yeah, but even with Bonus gone, they still kind of, they're a juggernaut.
They lock it down. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's why I would go Demko over. But again, like a big, this is going to be an important playoff series for Demko.
Yeah.
His only other time in the playoffs, they got swept. Or they lost, what was it, 2019-20?
Yeah, well, I guess. No, his what only time there? In the playoffs was in the bubble when Jacob Markstrom got hurt.
Oh,
so Demko actually played amazing. He played like three games against Vegas. He shut them out once. He let in one goal in game seven, and then Vegas had two empty netters. So he scared the hell out of Vegas, but Vegas still ended up winning. So that makes me, that's the one thing where it's like Demko hasn't played much of the playoffs, but when he did, he was tremendous.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm choosing Demko, even though Ottinger has been awesome as well.
Speaking of goalies, we've got a fun game, and Connor, you're going to intro this here. We've got a blind ranking goalie edition, is that what we're calling it?
Yes, we have a blind ranking goalie edition. We are stealing the thing that has gone viral and social media so many times.
This is what the kids are into.
Yes, everybody gets angry at these rankings.
All right.
So let's start it off.
I thought it was supposed to be a fun game. You're saying everyone we'll gets see. Angry.
Yeah.
We'll see. It's fun for me.
Okay.
First goalie, Ben Bishop.
Okay, hold on. So there's five names that we're going to have.
Yes.
Okay, and these are historical goalies, clearly, if you're saying Ben Bishop is number one?
Yes.
And we got to rank them in what, like best in our mind?
Just rank him.
Just rank him.
Okay.
Okay, Ben Bishop. I'm going to go four and hope it's not tallest goalies of all time.
Ben Bishop. Yeah, what was Ben Bishop as a goalie? I'm going to say, I don't want to say five because the next guy could just be complete trash. I'll go three because I don't know what Connor's got cooked in here.
All right.
We're sticking in Dallas. Anton Khudobin.
Ooh, okay. Well, I'm going to go five then, because he's, in a best-case scenario, backup.
Okay.
Khudobin, did he go to the final? He did.
He did.
Yep.
Yeah, because Bishop was hurt.
I'll go four.
All right.
All right, so you still have your fifth spot.
I got one, two, and five. Yeah. You got what?
One, two, three.
Vesa Toskala.
Oh.
Really screwed
right.
the pooch here, buddy.
Well, I'm going to go three. I don't want to put him ahead of Ben Bishop, but hey, here we are.
Let's go five.
All right. Darren Pang.
Two.
All right.
Yeah, I'll go two. Please be a good guy.
Ryan, you just, clearly you're going against your roots.
Apparently.
Roy Wuerters.
So what spot do you have left?
Well, I have number one left.
Me too.
Yeah.
This is an awful list.
Shortest goalie of all time is your favorite, your
Shrimp
best goalie.
Wuerters.
Yeah.
Oh, this is just mean.
Man, well done, Connor.
I like what you did here.
Yeah.
All right, so
that
let's
was a
go.
Setup.
Let's go 1 to 5. Both of you had Roy. Shrimp. Both of you had Pang at number two. Mike, you had Ben Bishop at number three, while Ryan, you had Vesa Toskala. Ryan, Ben Bishop at four. Mike at four is Anton Khudobin. And five for you, Ryan, is Anton Khudobin. Mike, it's Vesa Toskala. So,
we both lost.
We did, but I lost more.
You lost
say.
Much more,
yes.
Which is exactly what I wanted.
So you purely went by height here?
It had something to do with height, yes.
Yeah.
I wanted Ryan to accept that height doesn't matter with goalies.
Well, I don't think you achieved that goal.
Yeah, I don't think you did.
Oh, but shortest goalie of all time is your number one on this list.
Apparently.
That includes Ben Bishop.
There you go.
Well, how tall is Jake Ottinger? 6'6", did we
say? 6'6", apparently.
Okay, well, there you go. And we got Vancouver Canucks site editor Adam Kierzenblatt. We'll talk about the 6'4" Thatcher Demko coming up after the break. Stick with us.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there, everybody. This is Ryan Kennedy, editor-in-chief of the Hockey News, and I have a new web column, Future Watch Weekly, that you should keep an eye out for. Every week, I look at the developmental world of hockey from NCAA, Major Junior, all points in between. So check it out every Friday morning at THN.com.
Welcome back to the Hockey News pregame show. We're pleased to be joined by Vancouver Canucks team site editor Adam Kierzenblad. And Adam, those Vancouver Canucks, they lost 3-2 to the LA Kings, but still one of the hottest teams in the NHL and one of seven teams vying for the President's Trophy this year. You know, when we're looking at the playoff, you know, preview, who do you think matches up best against the Canucks?
Well, I can tell you that the team that doesn't match up well against the Canucks is the LA Kings. They are one of the most frustrating teams to watch. They just grind you to a halt. So last night, I think the Vancouver Canucks want to do everything that they can to avoid the LA Kings. Vegas is an interesting option. That's kind of the other one that you're looking at right now. You don't really know what Vegas is going to provide come playoff time. We all know that they're going to become healthy at game one of the Stanley Cup final or Stanley Cup playoffs at this point. But Vancouver has done a good job against Vegas this year, which is contrary to how they have done in Vegas's existence so far. So I think if you're really looking at it, you kind of want to take your chance with Vegas in that first round series. Just because, like I said, you don't know what the injuries, you don't know how injured players are. You don't know what this team actually looks like. I know that they're on a little bit of a roll now, but Vegas is probably the best option.
Now, Adam, you know, this Vancouver Canucks franchise and fan base has had a lot of ups and downs over the course of its history. Yet to win a Stanley Cup, have come close a couple of times. What's the level of anxiety right now in the greater Vancouver area around this team? Are people positive? Are they waiting for the shoe to drop? Like, what's the vibe right now?
Well, that's actually a very interesting question, because it is kind of like, okay, they're doing well, but we didn't expect them to do well. So what's going to happen? Like, it just feels like people are, they want to believe that this is the year that something is going to happen and that they're going to go on a long run and finally win the cup. But it's like we're kind of used to poking holes in this team. We're kind of used to looking at negatives. So, you know, even though Elias Lindholm, he's come in and he's done well, like people are like, oh, but he doesn't have a lot of points or his analytics aren't the best, but like he's added a new element to this entire team. He's made them one of the best faceoff teams in the league. You know, last night it was all about, well, we don't want to run into LA. What are the negatives from this? But like overall, the Canucks played well last night. They just couldn't break through to LA. And they're also 7-2-1 in their last 10. But like there's this kind of perception, like, when is this going to end? When are they bound for a first round playoff loss? But so it is very difficult as somebody in Vancouver. Also, because we didn't expect this. Like, if you told Vancouver fans that they'd have 45 wins, they'd say that's a great year, and we still have 10 games left in the season. They could get to 50 wins. Like, they could get to 110 points, theoretically. So there's a little bit of, like, hesitation to believe in the market at the moment, just because we know what the story is. We've been through this so many times in Canucks history. So I would say cautious optimism at the moment. But we, as a fan base in Vancouver, a lot of people are just on for the ride at this point. Let's just see what happens. But if they don't go on a long playoff run, at least they've set themselves up for the future. And now that they have experience, and most importantly, the Canuck fans get to watch a home playoff game for the first time in 9 years, which is the big thing being talked about in Vancouver right now.
Let's talk about Lindholm. He's day to day right now. Is that right, Adam?
He is day to day as per talk it. It's a, we'll wait and see. You know, they're in this situation where they could give him a week off because of how well they've done and how well they position themselves. So they are finishing up this 9-game road trip. They got Dallas and then they have Anaheim on Sunday at 12:30. In theory, you could rest him for both of those games just because you know where you sit in the standings at the moment. But we're not going to get too much clarification on Lindholm. Maybe afterwards we will, but for now, you know, going into the playoffs, you don't really want to, as a team, you don't want to really give out that information, because you don't want teams starting to target certain players, injured areas, which we know happens, come playoff time.
And on a similar note, Adam, Thatcher Demko, what's the prognosis on him in the short term?
It's a wait and see process. He's not on the ice just yet. I would not be surprised if he doesn't play during the homestand. Rick Tocchet has talked about playing Arthur Seelovs, so that kind of gives us an indication that Demko won't be back before the end of the homestand. But if you're kind of looking at a date, maybe mid-April, they got a couple games between mid-April and the end of the regular season. So, you know, if Demko plays four of the last five, that gives him a little bit of stretch run going into the playoffs, which I think is what they want. You don't want to bring him back too early, obviously. He has had some injury issues in the past. I believe this is not the same injury. They haven't really given too much clarification on what is going on with Thatcher Demko. But overall, if you can rest him and get him ready for the playoffs.
What are you looking for? Like, the Canucks now only have 10 games left. They're going to play LA once more, which you say is just like, it's looking like that's the matchup that they want to avoid. But, you know, are you just looking for this team just to get back to full health, or what do you think is on their wish list as we look at these final 10?
Well, when I was talking to some of the players this past week, you know, the constant mention was we need to be healthy for the playoffs and we need to be playing our game. So even though they might not be fighting for a position in the playoffs, they still want that home ice advantage throughout the Western Conference and even into the Stanley Cup final if they get there. But they also want to make sure that they're on the same page. That's why we're seeing different line combinations. You know, last night, down by one with 20 seconds left, Rick Tocchet puts Nikita Zadorov in front of the net. Like, they're just trying different things to see what works and what doesn't work, so that if they do have injuries or if somebody is, if there is a line that's not going or the team's not going, they know what to go to in the playoffs. So right now it's kind of a trial and error type situation, and they've earned that. You know, they've earned the right to experiment a bit, have a little bit more fun down these last 10 games, just based off the way that they played so far this season.
Excellent. And final question. It has been a tremendous season for the Canucks. Who do you say has been the team MVP? There's certainly a lot of candidates.
It's Quinn Hughes. I know that people will say JT Miller because of his point total, or Thatcher Demko, but it is Quinn Hughes. One thing that I've noticed just watching, like, I've watched Quinn Hughes for his whole career at this point, and you kind of forget how special he is. Like, he'll pull off moves at, like, we're just so used to him spinning off players at the blue line, changing direction, faking shots, and making, and like moving the puck like nobody else does. He also, it looks like he skates on an angle, which blows my mind how he does it. But, you know, this was conversation. It's like, Quinn Hughes is one of the smartest players in the NHL. There's no question about it. And you can kind of tell, like he pulls off these moves behind the net as a defenseman that you're like, how is he doing this? I mean, Wayne Gretzky a couple of years ago had that famous line at the All-Star game where it's like, oh, Quinn Hughes, that's a defenseman. Like, Wayne Gretzky was shocked at how good Quinn Hughes was. And that was a couple of years ago. Now he's on pace for, you know, over 85 points. He just moved into third all-time on the Canucks all-time scoring list among defensemen. He's the favorite for the Norris. And like, they've shown that they can win without Thatcher Demko. They haven't shown that they can win without Quinn Hughes. Like, this is last year when Quinn Hughes was injured, like there was nothing from the blue line. Like, their team collapsed basically. So it's Quinn Hughes by a mile. Like, I don't think that people in Vancouver, like, it's not that we become numb to how good Quinn Hughes is, but I don't think that we've seen it so much that you're kind of looking at it like, oh yeah, Quinn Hughes does that every day, but like no other defenseman in the NHL can probably do what he does at the blue line.
No, definitely a guy that's going to be up there for the Norris this year. And Adam, as long as the Canucks go further than the Oilers this year, I think the fan base is going to be happy. So thanks again for joining us. We've got more of the Hockey News pregame show coming up after the break.
Hey there, everybody. This is Ryan Kennedy, editor-in-chief of the Hockey News, and I have a new web column, Future Watch Weekly, that you should keep an eye out for. Every week, I look at the developmental world of hockey from NCAA, Major Junior, all points in between. So check it out every Friday morning at THN.com.
Welcome back to the Hockey News pregame show. Ryan, what time we got?
It's rapid fire time.
Our favorite time of the show. Producer Connor, hit us up with some questions.
It's like I'm in your bad books here, so I'll try to appease Mr. Kennedy.
There you go.
Would you like to see an NCAA champion versus U Sports champion series? If that were to happen this season, who would take it?
Okay, so yeah, this has come up a lot in hockey Twitter because the University of New Brunswick obviously went undefeated. I don't think it's a good comparison because if you took the top five scorers from the UNB Reds this year, on average they are older than the Ottawa Senators' young core. Like Stützle, Tkachuk, Sanderson, Norris, Batherson. Those guys on average are younger. Like UNB's leading scorer is 25 years old. He's 2 years younger than Connor McDavid.
Yep.
So, if anything, I think the U Sports champion should play either an AHL team or an ECHL team. Because even in college, like an older team isn't that old. Like you get teams like, you know, like Quinnipiac or like Ivy League schools where they're a little older, but they still like 18-year-olds. So I think it's like an apples to oranges scenario.
So you didn't answer the question. Like, would they win or lose?
Yeah, they would win.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, because there's so much
over. I want to see it, and I want to see them take down the NCAA champs.
Yeah.
14 players on that UNB team had played in the Ontario Hockey League, so you're not talking
about... They all played Major Junior.
Yeah, they're not talking about scrubs here.
Oh, no, they're good players.
Good players. Yeah. I don't think they...
They just all have kids.
Yeah, they won a championship the year before, didn't lose a game, won again.
Yeah.
Props to them, and let's take on Boston College or Boston University or Michigan, whatever.
It would be interesting to see, like, Boston College, which is obviously one of the best teams, literally the number one team in the nation right now, because if they were to take on an older NCAA team, they would still probably win. So it would be interesting, but I just don't think it's a super fair matchup.
They're all going to play in the NHL next year, these guys in Boston College.
A lot of them will, it's true.
No, I want to see it, and let's see how they can hang with us Canadian boys, even though a lot of them are Canadians.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, I'm going to continue appeasing you. Josh Doan is expected to make his debut tonight. What do you project him to be as a player?
I think he'll be a solid, like, middle six. Like, I could see him being a second line winger. He's got, like good frame on him. He was a bit of a late bloomer. So when Arizona got him in the draft, they got him in a good slot. He was coming off a fantastic year in the USHL. But he can produce and obviously has that NHL pedigree. So I think he's going to be a pretty decent NHLer.
Yeah, 46 points, 26 goals with Tucson this year, the Roadrunners. So, I think it's going to be exciting for just the whole Coyotes organization. Like, you're adding Josh Doan to a team that's got Logan Cooley, Dylan Gunther, just really built around just a young nucleus of players. So, is he going to be Shane Doan 2.0? Probably not, but that being said,
that's a high bar.
Yeah, could he be Zach Hyman?
Oh, that's a good thought.
Yeah, so I'm excited about it, and I'm excited about this Coyotes team.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I have a feeling a member of the Leafs staff might be in Arizona tonight. Just a guess.
Okay. Oh, yeah, that's right. Shane Doan wears the Leafs now.
Yes. Aiden Hill is still out for Vegas after last night's win. Do you still have a lot of confidence in them making the playoffs, and are you worried at all about Logan Thompson's potential workload?
I'm not, because it feels like the West is pretty much locked in right now, especially like St. Louis lost or dropped a point, and the Blues just cannot afford to drop any points at this point.
Yeah.
So I think Vegas is fine, and if they are fine, we could see Jiří Patera get some starts if Aiden Hill is still out. So at this point, I'm not worried.
I'm not worried, but if you're Vegas, you are going dangerously close to a unfavorable first round opponent. Mm-hmm. And say what you will about they're going to get Mark Stone back and Thomas Hertl's going to be healthy and you know all the stars are going to align for them in the first round. You're basically going from, you know, Mark Stone's not going to play any games to a first round opponent who very well could be the Colorado Avalanche,
yep.
could be the Vancouver Canucks, could be the Dallas Stars. Those aren't really the first round matchups that you want, especially after going so like all in at the deadline. So I've got a level of concern, not that they're going to miss the playoffs, but they're not setting themselves up for, you know, a long playoff run here.
Mm. All right. Going hockey related, but more pop culture. Mm. What's your favorite hockey video game?
Blades of Steel, baby.
Is it really?
Oh, yeah. I never
Does it hold up, though?
I haven't played it in decades, but I didn't get into the gameplay of the modern NHL video games. Something about it just didn't click with me.
Yeah.
I always loved Blades of Steel, and it had like the games you could play in intermission on the Jumbotron, and mm-hmm. of course it had fighting, so yeah, Blades of Steel all day.
Wow, very old school. I thought I was going old school by going NHL 94 for the Super Nintendo, which,
the classic.
You know, I could still play that one because I think it does hold up, and mm-hmm. you know, you don't have to be a genius with the controller anymore. You can just, you know, button mash and still win your way. I love controlling the goalie too, which is always cool. That was the first game where, you know, goalies you could control and really alter the game.
Nice. So.
All right, last question. Best hockey movie of all time.
It's cliche, but it's Slapshot for me. And I like to point out to people that not only is it a good hockey movie, it's just a good movie in general because you have the backdrop of like Rust Belt America during that time of like, you know, sort of ennui. So not only is all the on-ice stuff great, but just the whole movie and the setting makes it just one of those great like 70s movies.
I disagree, and I'm totally in the minority here. I'm not a huge Slapshot movie fan.
Okay.
For me, I go Miracle.
That's a good one.
And as a Canadian, that might sound like, oh my God, how could you pick a movie where you're highlighting the 1980 U.S. team
right.
that won Olympic gold? But, you know, Kurt Russell does the best Herb Brooks, mm-hmm. and I still get chills at the end when they beat the Russians, or I guess the Soviets at that time. I love that movie. I think the performances are great. It's a Disney movie, and Disney does sports movies so well. Mm. So, Miracle all day long.
All right, there you go. That's rapid fire.
All right. Thanks again for listening, watching to the Hockey News pregame show. That's Ryan Kennedy. I'm Michael Trakos. Thank you again to BetMGM and NorthlandHockey.com. We're going to see you next time at the rink.